Good morning, everyone. I call this regular meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to order. I'm Randy Chrisman, Chairman of the Commission, joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugen-Hoffert and Julie Fedorchak. So we have a quorum. To start things out, would you please join me in pledging our allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I forgot to really think about opening comments. I don't think I have any this morning. Commissioner Haugen-Hoffert, do you?
Yes, I do. Good morning, everyone. I'm going to talk a little bit about this pipeline safety. We have a young division, under 2 years in the pipeline safety program. And to become an inspector, it takes quite a bit of training through our PHMSA. And I would like to recognize one of our pipeline safety individuals, Lincoln, who as of February 16th, she completed her PHMSA gas core training classes. And just to recap what she has accomplished less than 2 years as far as training, this totals six training courses at PHMSA, which is located in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. And along with that, she has taken an additional 15 web-based virtual training classes. And just really, again, shout out that she's accomplished this less than 2 years. So now that she is able to go out there and do some of the inspections, Caleb, who is her supervisor, will observe her for a little bit and then release her to do the inspection. So compliments to her on that goal, along with, I know Brandon is working very hard, but Caleb and Conrad as a oversight on working really hard on getting that training for the individuals and to accomplish our inspections, what we need to, because we do have our annual PHMSA inspection coming up, and proudly I've tasked the staff and with their accomplishment that we get 100% again in our PHMSA audit. So kudos to that division, to Lincoln and everyone for accomplishing that in a short period of time.
Thank you for pointing that out. Good point. I just want to add, because I don't think this has changed from when I had that portfolio. Her attending those training classes in Oklahoma, that's not just a matter of her at her convenience getting down there. The scheduling of those has always been a big constraint yep. for our inspectors. That means real sacrifice, because if you're not ready to go right at that time, it might be a long wait for that particular class again. So extra kudos to her, too. Yep. So thank you for pointing that out. Commissioner Fedorchak, anything new with you?
Not much, but I thought I'd talk a little bit about the upcoming NARUC Winter Policy Summit. So I'm president of NARUC this year. And we have three meetings a year. One of the big meetings, probably our biggest meeting of the year, is coming up on, it starts on Sunday in Washington, D.C. It's our Winter Policy Summit. And we have been working on this for the last 3 to 4 months, trying to really develop an agenda that gets to the core of some of the reliability and affordability issues that regulators throughout the country are facing as we are tasked with various different timelines for decarbonization that have been established throughout this country. We know there's risks for reliability and affordability, and I took it as one of the mainstays of my time as NARUC president to shine the light on that. And so we have, the great news is we have record attendance. We have 1,800 plus people signed up to attend this conference. Our meetings organizer expects more to register at the door because she keeps getting calls from folks who want to come. I think that really speaks to the level importance of the issues that we're talking about and the understanding, at least around people who we circulate with, the fundamental role that our policies and the electricity and energy systems in this country play in the economies and communities in which we all live. So included in our agenda is Robert Bryce. He's an author. He's going to talk a lot about what's happening globally as it relates to this energy transition. He's a very straightforward, nonpartisan person who is quite critical about some of the policies that are in place. We have Senator Joe Manchin, who's going to come and speak to us. So that's pretty exciting. He's going to talk, give an update from his perspective on what's on the agenda in the Senate Energy Committee this legislative session. We have EPA Air Quality Administrator Joe Goffman, who's in charge of the EPA's greenhouse gas rules that will impact all of the coal and gas fired electric generating facilities in this country. They're in the final stages of developing rules, pretty onerous rules that would have a significant impact on these facilities. He's going to meet with myself and three other commissioners from throughout the country who are going to have a discussion with him on stage and the main stage about where the EPA is going with these policies and how they plan to accommodate the reliability needs of the country in developing these rules. And we have, some panels on various pathways to decarbonization, a panel on a day in the life of an operator during a winter storm. We have hell visits for the first time in many, many years, first time since I've been on the commission, so that's at least 12 years, where the commissioners there have actually gone to the Hill while we're in D.C. and talked to congressmen and senators about the policies that they're considering and the impacts that they have. So I think it's going to be a great opportunity for our regulators throughout the country to really hone in on some of these challenges, share ideas, share concerns, interact with other policymakers, and, hopefully just leave a little bit more educated, a little bit more motivated to do our jobs well on behalf of the people we serve. So excited for that next couple, 5 days or so.
Good luck with all that.
Thank you.
Moving on to our agenda, I move approval of the two items on the consent calendar plus the previous minutes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, going into the regular agenda then, I move the commission adopt the order on eligible telecommunications carrier designation in Dish Wireless LLC, designated eligible carrier application, case number PU-23-84.
Second.
And I will say this and my next agenda item are going to sound very, very similar. I think it's important to make the points on the record here. There are tiny distinctions, but on the next one, if you start to feel like you heard that before, it's because some of it you did hear before. On March 6th of last year, Dish Wireless filed an application for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier for the purpose of receiving federal universal service support for low-income consumers. Dish proposes to provide wireless prepaid Lifeline universal services to qualifying low-income North Dakota customers by using a combination of its own facilities and reselling another carrier's facilities. Then on March 29th, we issued a notice of opportunity for hearing. No requests for hearing were received. And so the issues to be considered in this matter are three. Number one is the applicant qualified? Number two is, what universal support area should be designated, if any? And number three is the designation of the applicant as an ETC in the public interest? On May 12th, the Broadband Association of North Dakota filed comments in regard to Dish's application, and that is one of the distinctions they did not on the subsequent one. On June 8th, we held an informal hearing to discuss the issues with Dish. And so some points that we've gleaned out of all this, Dish is a common carrier and reseller of commercial mobile radio service, and will offer all of the services and functionalities detailed in FCC rules. Dish generates revenue from non-Lifeline services as well, and so they have access to capital from investors. Dish proposes to provide services to customers by using the underlying networks of AT&T and T-Mobile DISH is currently authorized as a wireless ETC in Colorado, New York, and Oklahoma. And DISH has not been subject to any enforcement action at the FCC or in any of those states. They'll offer telecommunication services primarily to low-income eligible subscribers. They seek only lifeline support from the universal or from the low-income mechanism of the Universal Service Fund, not from the high-cost support mechanism. In this proceeding, DISH is requesting ETC designation in all North Dakota telephone exchanges. They're a commercial mobile radio service provider, so they do not have an official telephone directory in the state, so they are requesting a waiver from our requirement pursuant to North Dakota Administrative Code, which allows us to waive that requirement. The comments submitted by the Broadband Association asserted that more information is needed to ascertain if DISH would be capable of serving customers at a level of service that meet the lifeline service standards in all areas of the state as required by the FCC. They also asserted that granting ETC status to DISH may not be in the public interest due to the new ETC's eroding of the customer base of Broadband Association members and thereby increasing the overall per customer cost. The Commission appreciates the interest and comments of the Broadband Association. However, it has not been demonstrated that designation of DISH as a lifeline-only ETC in North Dakota would not be in the public interest, nor has sufficient evidence been submitted that demonstrates a smaller service area should be granted. So based on the evidence in this proceeding, DISH is qualified under the Telecommunications Act of 1996 for designation as an ETC. And bottom line, if approved, this order states that DISH Wireless is designated as an eligible telecommunications carrier in all study areas in North Dakota and is granted a waiver of the requirements regarding the publication of an official telephone directory.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Now for round two, I move the Commission adopt the order on eligible telecommunications carrier designation in Terracom Incorporated, designated eligible carrier application case number PU-23-291.
Second.
On August 22nd of last year, Terracom filed an application for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier for the purpose of receiving federal universal service support for low-income consumers. Terracom proposes to provide lifeline universal services to eligible low-income customers as a commercial mobile radio service carrier throughout every telephone exchange in North Dakota. On September 6th, we issued a notice of opportunity. No comments or requests for hearing were received. The issues to be considered in this matter, again, are, is the applicant qualified? What universal support area should be designated, if any? And is designation of the applicant as an ETC in the public interest? On November 29th, we held an informal hearing to discuss the issues with Terracom. From that, we took away that Terracom is a common carrier and reseller of commercial mobile radio service and will offer all of the services and functionalities detailed in federal rules. They generate revenue from non-lifeline services and have access to capital from investors. They propose to provide services to customers by using the underlying networks of AT&T and or T-Mobile, and they're currently authorized as a wireless ETC in 14 states. Terracom will offer telecommunications services primarily to eligible low-income subscribers. They seek only lifeline support from the low-income mechanism of the Federal Universal Service Fund and do not seek support from the high-cost support mechanism. In this proceeding, Terracom is requesting ETC designation in all telephone exchanges, and since they are a CMRS provider, they do not have an official telephone directory in the state and requesting a waiver from that requirement, again, pursuant to North Dakota Administrative Code. In this one, there were no other outside comments received either. So based on the evidence in this proceeding, Terracom is qualified under the Telecommunications Act of 1996 for designation as an ETC, eligible to receive federal universal service support for low-income consumers. If approved, the order states that Terracom is designated as an eligible telecommunications carrier for all study areas of North Dakota and is granted a waiver of the requirements regarding the publication of an official telephone directory. I just want to say more generically that this is frustrating to me to see the amount of federal dollars being thrown away, enticing these companies to come here and set up. And clearly there's money in it for them. They meet all the rules, and so we approve them. Mm-hmm. However, it is absurd with the number of low-income qualified Lifeline potential subscribers in North Dakota that we have company after company coming in here in order to harvest federal tax dollars. That's really the only reason. We have way more than plenty providers available to service our Lifeline eligible potential subscribers. And yet they're investing the dollars, coming in here, doing all the filings correctly, and coming in here and harvesting those tax dollars. And it's frustrating. I was told, this isn't on the record, so I can't verify it. I was told in the community of Minot, between Lifeline and another federal program that is currently still available, that was just put together, I think, during COVID in order to throw more money around, that also entices companies to come in and provide services. Such as, I was told there's over 80 telecommunications carriers available in Minot alone. It just doesn't make sense. And although I don't feel we have the evidence of it to deny, I don't think there's any doubt that many carriers coming in here is harming the customer base of the companies that actually are here to serve all the customers. And this is a big concern on the taxpayer waste side, but I do think long term it's going to have an impact on the companies that we expect to be available to serve the last customer too. And so it's concerning, but I don't see that there's evidence to deny. So I guess my motion is to approve.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Hogenhofer.
Thank you. I move the commission adopt the order and notice of default in Public Service Commission As North LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number DM-23-229.
Second.
Thank you. On June 19th of this past year, the commission received a North Dakota One Call complaint from One Oak. The complaint alleges As North violated North Dakota Century Code by failing to contact the North Dakota One Call Center to provide an excavation or a location notice before beginning any excavation. So we received the complaint, and the staff the next day sent a letter to the company regarding the complaint filed and requested a response by July 14th. No response was received, so on July 24th, advocacy staff spoke with the company, and a representative acknowledged they got the complaint and they would be responding. Time passed again. On October 24th, staff again spoke to a representative via telephone regarding the lack of response, and again, the company reassured staff that they would be responding. That was on October 24th. As of November 6th, staff had received no response to the telephone calls or emails. So I'm just going to give you a little, that's the timeline. I'm going to tell you what happened, and then the result of that. So on the 13th, As North began an excavation at a residential septic, in the residential area, and there was no evidence that the company contacted, like I said, North Dakota One Call prior to beginning the excavation. And during the excavation, As North struck One Oaks, a gas gathering line, causing a release. The company did notify One Oak as required, and they were on site immediately and locked down all the wells and closed the block valve to isolate the line. Four customers were affected, and they did an estimate damage value at that time of over $18,000. And then on October 19th, they provided a final cost estimate of damage, which was $11,235. As of this date, has not been paid, as confirmed by One Oak. They haven't received reimbursement for that damage. The staff did their due diligence on November 2nd, and they contacted the Williston Police Department to see if there was any a call made to them because of the gas leak. It would be constituent. That's under our rules that if there is a gas leak, that they it's an emergency, and they call 911, and they failed to do so. So communication stopped with the company on the last date was October 24th. They have failed to submit any type of response to the complaint. They failed to do the one call notification. They also failed by contacting 911. So As North is in default of the North Dakota's Century Code and the administrative code chapter for failing to file a response to the complaint within 20 days. They are also in violation, as stated, by failing to provide an excavation or location notice before they began their project, and by failing to call 911 when the damage resulted in the release of a flammable gas. As North is assessed a civil penalty of $7,400. They must remit that civil penalty to us within 10 days upon receipt of the order of this, upon receipt of this order and notice of default. This order and notice of default constitutes a written notice of default in a statement of the grounds for the default. And under North Dakota Century Code, As North does have 7 days after service of this order and notice of default to file a written motion requesting the default order be vacated and stating the grounds relied upon for the request. Unless As North within 7 days after service of this order and notice of default files a written motion requesting the default order be vacated, this order and notice of default will be a final determination of this matter. So, we've done all that we can. I want to thank the staff for trying to reach out to this company. It started off good, but then now, since October, they have failed to give us a response or a response to their written complaint, and I support this order.
We have a motion and a second. Do we have any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you. I move the commission adopt the order in Northern States Power Company application to amend order application case number PU-23-366.
Second.
Thank you. On December 29th, 2023, NSP filed an application for the commission to amend its January 14th, 2009 order. The application would eliminate NSP's requirement to file advanced determination of prudence for certain new transmission and generation additions. On January 2nd, the commission issued a notice of opportunity of hearing. No responses were received. On January 24th, during the commission approved a three-month extension for filing of any new ADPs. And later that afternoon, we did have an informal with NSP regarding their request to for the ADPs to remove that. NSP application, during our informal and discussion, we said since 2009, a couple things have been established, and the first was NSP may only request recovery of a resource in its renewable rider if it was granted an ADP by the commission. And then also the second thing, requirement that has changed in 2021, the North Dakota legislator passed the commission's ability to formally request a resource plan. So with the integrated resource plan coming up, they saw it as a two-factor, doing an ADP and submitting an integrated resource plan. It's time-consuming and costly, and we agreed with that. NSP in its original filing said that it would only, that they would file an ADP if they so choose to do so. But during the informal hearing and agreed upon and subsequent filing, that they or alternatively the commission may request an ADP be filed by its own motion or order. And they agreed to that and submitted on February 15th an amendment to that. And based on our informal and the discussion, I grant in NSP's application is granted, and I support that.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I will just say that I think three of the wisest regulators in the history of regulating set this requirement for NSP to do these ADPs. And I just nothing but respect for them. But the change with the IRPs, to me, is the big factor in what makes it different now to basically undo the order that they worked very hard on coming up with. And I'm a little worried about it, frankly, because I don't see our IRP process moving along very quickly. And that's not blaming. I mean, it's an enormous process, and the companies make it extra challenging, I think, sometimes. And so I hope that the IRP process will ultimately work as well as we're anticipating. If not, we might be back to what we're undoing now. But I think we are doing the right thing here. I just wanted to acknowledge that there is, and I mean, you said it, but I wanted to further acknowledge it, that there is that big distinction between the world as we're living it and what was the case in 2009 when they did this, because I have so much respect for those three.
Is there?
I agree, Randy.
I agree with both of you. I think the one thing that gives me comfort is that we can request an ADP, yeah. Staff can, if they feel that one is needed at any point, and will be notified of these things and get a chance to see them. But that gives me comfort that, you know, we kind of have the best of both worlds. We can use the IRP process that gives us the fulsome view of the whole system that we need to make determinations on individual resources. But also if we feel like they're moving too quickly on something and we want to take a closer look at it outside of the IRP process, we still can by request from staff. So I think it's a good balance.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That ends my portfolio.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Right. I just have one item. I move the commission adopt the order on interim rates and Northern States Power Company 2024 natural gas rate increase application case number PU-23-367.
Second.
So the end of December, NSP filed a rate increase for their gas system of 8.5. It's a 9.4% rate increase that would generate for them $8.5 million in additional revenue. That's their request. Their filing of a rate increase is they are entitled to an interim rate increase, which is what we're looking at today. And interestingly and smartly, the law requires that any interim rate increase request meet three conditions. One, that it reflects the same return on equity or earnings level that the original or existing rates have. That the new rates or the interim rates must cover investments and expenses of the same nature and kind that are included in the existing rates, and that the interim rate increase is based on the same or is collected in the same rate design. So NSP has requested that with their rate increase, their rate case, and our staff has evaluated their interim request and the interim rate increase request, and has confirmed that it does meet those three criteria. So the company is entitled to receive those interim rates. Those interim rates will collect about $7.9 million. So almost the full amount that they're requesting in the overall rate increase. And they will be effective March 1st, and they will be subject to refund if the final rates that we approve in this case many months from now are ultimately less than that, and customers will be given a refund of any overcharges that they've paid if that is the case. On this case, the interim rate bill impact for residential customers estimated to be about $5.73 a month for the interim rate increase. And the primary drivers of this overall rate increase request laid out by NSP are capital investments in its gas distribution system. So they're going out and improving pipe that exists, replacing, et cetera. Investments in its peaking plants, make sure they have the capacity to meet the growing demand in the system for its gas. And then general and intangible capital investments such as in information technology, fleet modernization, and other improvements to the facilities. So that's what's driving this request. The last time they had a rate increase case in front of us was in 2021. So I think that summarizes the highlights of the rate increase and the interim rates.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That's it for me. Thank you, Randy.
Okay, a couple of announcements here. This afternoon, we have kind of a series. We have them scheduled as two different informal hearings, but it could be as many as four or as few as one. Almost depends on how you look at it. At 1:30, we have the informal on case 23-272, which is MDU's service area agreement down in Ellendale. Then at 3, we have the informal hearing on technically three cases, 23-320, which is the public convenience and necessity for Applied Digital's second office space. They have their office and their processing center separate. And we did that on the first set, and now they're adding a second. So 23-320 is the office space for the second round of it. And then 23-321 is the PCNN for the second phase of the processing extension. And then 23-322 is their electric service agreement with Applied Digital. So that'll be this afternoon on Tuesday the 5th. And I really want to emphasize that we have a special commission meeting. And that replaces the regular commission meeting that's canceled that would have been Wednesday, March 6th. And so just an alert on that one. That concludes the announcements. With that, we will stand in recess in advance of our administrative agenda and take questions from the press.